The headlines this hour. Iran says the latest stance of the International Atomic Energy Agency on the country's nuclear program is based on an incorrect judgment by the agency's inspector. Russia once again blames the West for the continuation of the war in Ukraine, saying it is merely responding to the Western countries' actions. And calls are growing for accountability and an end to U.S. police brutality, as a funeral service is held for a black man recently killed by Memphis police. Warm welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran says it regrets the latest stance of the International Atomic Energy Agency on the country's nuclear program. Iran's nuclear chief, Mohammad Islami, said the IAEA inspector had reported to the agency incorrect interpretation on Tehran. He added that the inspector found out his error of judgment after the Islamic Republic provided explanations to the UN nuclear watchdog the same day. On Wednesday, the IAEA accused Iran of substantially modifying an interconnection between two centrifuge clusters enriching uranium. In a report, it also criticized Iran for possible uranium enrichment up to 60% purity at its Fordow nuclear plant. Iran's ambassador to the UN says a preliminary investigation shows Israel was responsible for Saturday's terrorist attack on a military site in the central Iranian city of Isfahan. Saeed Erbani also pointed out Israeli Prime Minister's recent interview with U.S. media, in which he admitted to, quote, taking action against certain weapons development sites in Iran. Erbani called Israel's assault a brazen violation of international law and urged the U.N. Security Council to hold the regime accountable. The Iranian diplomat stressed that his country reserves the right to defend its national security and respond to any aggression or threats by Israel. Erbani also condemned as provocative and irresponsible a tweet by Ukraine's presidential adviser on the drone attack in which he accused Iran of providing weapons to Russia. This is while Tehran has repeatedly denied giving weapons to Moscow to be used in the Ukraine war. Political analyst Fouad Azadi earlier joined us with his take on Iran's preliminary investigation into a terrorist attack on a military site in Isfahan.
The Israeli regime is engaging in this type of illegal attacks with the full support of the United States, and the U.S. is shielding the Israeli regime at the U.N. If it was a normal situation, the Israelis would not be able to repeat these type of attacks. And what the United States is saying is that we will go to the negotiating table, get some concessions out of Iran, and the concessions that we didn't get at the negotiating table will have the Israelis attack those sites that we could not negotiate over and get what we want through Israeli attacks. So what the Americans are saying is that either you give us concessions at the negotiating table or we will destroy the areas that we were not successful in negotiating about. And this is obviously not acceptable. And to be honest with you, all these type of activities at the end of the day have strengthened Iran's nuclear program and military programs.
Iranians are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution that led to the ouster of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime. The celebrations, starting on February the 1st, coincide with the return of late Imam Khomeini from several years of exile in 1979 and culminate in nationwide rallies 10 days later. Gisu Mishahmedi has more.
The 44th anniversary of the late Imam Khomeini's return to Iran from several years of exile, marking the beginning of 10 days of celebrations. In Iran, festivities have begun, with Iranians from all walks of life gathering in the mausoleum of Imam Khomeini to renew their pledge of allegiance to the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, while a special ceremony is also underway, demonstrating that the divide-and-rule policy of the enemies of the Islamic Revolution has failed.
I've come here to renew my pledge of allegiance with Imam Khomeini, who was an advocate of social justice and at the forefront of fighting oppressors worldwide.
Assyrians have been living in Iran for more than 3,000 years. This shows that no matter what our enemies do, we will remain united as a nation.
Over the past 44 years, we have managed to overcome many obstacles simply because we remain united, and it's important for our nation to remain that way.
A point that was also raised by the keynote speaker of the ceremony, Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf.
The Islamic Revolution is known worldwide with the name of Imam Khomeini, a great man known for fighting imperialism who always invited the nation to be united in the face of our enemies' plots and said, you know, you're walking down the right path when your enemies do everything they can to stop you. If your enemies are ever indifferent, it is a clear sign that we have deviated from the right path. So their increased animosity is actually a good sign.
That is why the presence of masses at the mausoleum this year is more significant than previous years, considering a period of foreign-backed riots in the country and Western countries increasing political pressure on Iran to unprecedented levels.
We are here to say that we are proud of our revolution and our country.
When Imam Khomeini needed our support to topple the Pahlavi regime, my sons did not hesitate.
I am here to say that I will always support the leader and the Islamic revolution.
My son gave his life for this revolution, and I am here to uphold his values.
Iranians are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution at a time when they've managed to thwart foreign-backed riots in the country and bring peace and calm back to all the cities across Iran. More than anything, the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution is a show of solidarity. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Moscow says it would respond to the delivery of longer-range Western weapons to Kiev by pushing Ukrainian forces further away from Russian borders.
If now we are striving to move the artillery of the Ukrainian armed forces back to a distance, that means they cannot threaten our territories. Then the more long-range weapons the regime supplies to Kiev, the further it will need to be moved away from the territory that is part of our country. And this escalation, you are absolutely right, has snowballed. It all started with helmets of some sort for Ukraine's military personnel. Then the small arms appeared. Now everyone is talking about planes.
Lavrov said the West turned down talks and forced Kiev to withdraw from the negotiation process. He said Western states led by the U.S. have been, quote, persistently working to make sure the Ukraine war never ends. Meanwhile, the European Union plans to impose new sanctions on Russia on the first anniversary of the war.
We will introduce with our G7 partners an additional price cap on Russian petroleum products, and by the 24th of February, exactly 1 year since the invasion started, we aim to have the 10th package of sanctions in place.
The EU Commission chief also claims sanctions are eroding Russia's economy by throwing it back a generation. She also estimated the existing oil price cap is costing Moscow around 160 million euros every day. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky urged the EU to quickly slap more sanctions on Russia. He said the pace of European sanctions has gone down. Ukraine has reported more casualties in the eastern Donbass region as Russia intensifies its attacks ahead of the first anniversary of its military operation there. The Ukrainian military says Russian forces have struck the city of Bakhmut in Donetsk province and at least 10 nearby towns and villages. Separately, Ukrainian police say that Russian missile strikes on several apartment buildings in the eastern city of Kramatorsk have left 3 people dead and 20 others injured. President Volodymyr Zelensky says the situation has become tougher as Russia is seeking for more gains before February 24th. That is the day when Russia began its offensive against Ukraine last year. Zelensky has already requested for new weapons and their fast deliveries from his Western backers. We reached out to our correspondent in Donetsk, Johnny Miller, and asked him to fill us in on the latest fighting in the Donbass region. Let's take a listen.
Well, war is raging across much of Donbass, particularly around the settlements of Bakhmut, Malinka, and Ugledar. The Ukrainians are so well dug in these settlements. They've had months, sometimes years, to create their fortifications. And so Russia is finding it very hard to take these places, but they're using their overwhelming artillery superiority and also trying to surround these settlements to cut off the supply lines, force the Ukrainians to surrender. But very tough fighting. We think the Ukrainians are losing a lot more casualties than the Russians. The reasons the Ukrainians are trying to hold on to these towns is because they are so important strategically. If Russia is able to take these towns, they'll be able to push on and take much of the Donbass, which is their primary objective right now. In terms of what's happening in NATO countries, we are starting to see some peace movement, peace protests in European countries or even in the United States. Some European politicians and newspaper columnists starting to suggest at some point Ukraine may well run out of men and NATO may well run out of weapons to give Ukraine. Increasingly, there's concerning videos coming out of Ukraine of soldiers forcibly mobilizing civilians, Ukrainian civilians, on the streets in order for them to join the army and be sent to the front. But still, the pro-war lobby, if you like, led in part by Boris Johnson, the former British Prime Minister, are still very much in control as they push for a seemingly endless war in Ukraine.
The Bank of England has increased its interest rates for a 10th time in a row amid an unprecedented cost of living crisis in the country. The Bank of England said the rate will be lifted by half a point to 4%. That is the highest level since late 2008. The bank's announcement is likely to worsen Britain's cost of living crisis. That's because commercial lenders will now ramp up their own interest rates on credit cards, mortgages, and other loans. The BOE says the impact of the Brexit on Britain's economy is probably showing up faster than expected. Britain has been gripped by strikes for the past weeks, as public and private sector workers have walked out of their jobs in a dispute with the government over pay. The European Parliament has lifted the immunity of two lawmakers targeted in a Belgian probe into suspected bribery linked to Qatar and Morocco. Belgian authorities voted to strip Belgian MEP Marc Tarabella and Italian MEP Andrea Cozzolino of their protection from prosecution. Belgium suspects the two MEPs of involvement in a bribery scheme. The decision opens the way for Belgian investigators to question the two MEPs to expand the probe. It's alleged that Qatar and Morocco funneled money through NGOs to influence decisions by the European Parliament. Both European lawmakers have rejected the allegations as false. Anger continues to grow in the U.S. over last month's police killing of a young African-American. A string of fatal shootings of blacks in recent years, most of the time in racially motivated incidents, have raised serious questions about growing police violence in the U.S.
Black Lives Matter. This is a popular slogan we often come across in the streets of the United States following the fatal shooting and beating to death of African Americans there. That began with the racially motivated killing of Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, among others. Anger and shock once again prevail as American protesters march in different cities to denounce police brutalities and demand justice for another victim, 29-year-old Tyre Nichols. The man was beaten to death by a group of officers in the city of Memphis, Tennessee, after he was stopped for a traffic violation in early January. Nichols was in confusion as to why he had been stopped, but before he could know, the cops started kicking, punching, and pepper spraying him while he was crying for help. Nichols was pronounced dead in a hospital 3 days later. Activists are still in disbelief on how the police could treat a member of the society like Nichols as an enemy in the battlefield. Here at Nichols' funeral, his family desperately called for an end to police brutality against the African-American community. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris, who was also present at the funeral, slammed the killing and talked about an act that has a slim chance of getting passed in the Congress.
And as Vice President of the United States, we demand that Congress pass the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. Joe Biden will sign it. And we should not delay. And we will not be denied. It is non-negotiable.
Ironically, U.S. officials have turned up on such occasions in the past and made similar promises, but to no avail. Figures show that police brutality remained as rampant as it had been in the previous years. Law enforcement killed nearly 1,200 people, or about 100 people a month last year, making it the deadliest for police violence. Repeated shooting and lack of transparency have already terrorized America's black community. Many believe the reoccurrence of the brutal scene cannot be prevented by just suspending culprits. No African American will truly become safe from police brutality until its root causes are identified and dealt with.
With that, we come to an end for this edition of World News. It's bye-bye for now. We'll be right back.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. With the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran in 1979, the United States of America lost control of what Jimmy Carter once described as an island of stability in one of the more troubled areas of the world. Under the leadership of Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Ruhollah Khomeini, the Iranian nation had fought an uphill battle in ousting the pro-West Shah. They were longing for a country with national sovereignty, a country with the greatest degree of self-determination, free from the yoke of the Eastern and the Western blocs. The so-called Island of Stability had been rocked by a revolution that had zero tolerance for foreign interference activities, and that was not what the Americans and other great powers of the time expected, and hence the enmity towards Iran began. Separatism, especially in the country's border areas, was among the immediate challenges the newly established republic was faced with. Just one day after the victory of the revolution, separatists in Iran's Kurdistan and Azerbaijan revolted against the government. Meanwhile, a bloody assassination campaign was launched by the Mujahideen-e Khalq organization, MKO, a terrorist group that took the lives of over 12,000 Iranian citizens. The terrorist cult also targeted a great number of Iran's senior officials with the ultimate aim of taking power in the country. Although the aim was naive, it stripped the country of figures who could play significant roles in the future of the republic. Terrorist acts were later committed by other enemies of Iran, especially the Israeli regime, in its desperate attempt to hamper the country's peaceful nuclear program. In April 1980, almost a year after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, the U.S. Armed Forces carried out Operation Eagle Claw. But the mission was aborted as the American helicopters were caught in a sandstorm in Tabaz in the east of Iran.
Oh, it's, a significant reminder for United States and other countries that are thinking about attacking Iran that it's not going to be that easy. Iran now is much more powerful in terms of its military and in terms of its defense.
A few months later, in yet another abortive attempt known as the Noje coup d'etat, the country's enemies were trying to overthrow the newly established Islamic Republic of Iran, this time with the help of the traitorous members of the Air Force loyal to the dethroned Shah.
I think looking back on it, it was quite pathetic. You know, it was very badly organized and really it was half-hearted. It was making certain assumptions which wasn't going to come true. But nevertheless, it was quite testing for the newly formed government.
With two failed attempts, the Americans and their allies tried to restore their trampled pride, this time by encouraging an ambitious Iraqi dictator, namely Saddam Hussein, who launched an 8-year war against Iran. From the very beginning, riots, coup attempts, assassinations, and military actions were all coupled with monetary pressure on Tehran. For instance, in November 1979, through Executive Order 12170, Carter froze about $8.1 billion in Iranian assets, including bank deposits, gold, and other properties. The practice has continued since then.
For people who say these are just symbolic, that's not the case at all. We've literally locked up tens and tens of billions of dollars. These sanctions will come along with additional entities where people are hiding money. So no, these sanctions are highly effective.
These so-called highly effective sanctions are also known in Iran by yet another name, economic terrorism, as they have indiscriminately been targeting the whole nation.
People are also subjected to the most brutal form of economic terrorism, deliberately targeting innocent civilians to achieve illegitimate political objectives. The unlawful extraterritorial economic sanctions imposed on Iran by the United States in violation of Security Council Resolution 2231 represent the greatest threat to the achievement of sustainable development goals of Iran and many of our neighbors.
In just one case, U.S. unilateral sanctions have prevented EB children in Iran from having special wound dressings, resulting in their silence and slow deaths.
Since May 2018, that the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the JCPOA, up to May 2019, a number of children suffering from EB died only because they did not have Mepilex dressings. I want to tell those who claim to be defenders of human rights what has been the crime of this 37-day-old baby who died of the disease only because we did not have Mepilex dressings as a result of the U.S. sanctions.
Last but not least, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been the innocent victim of a politically motivated smear campaign, spearheaded by Washington. Through their ugly, distorted lens, the Americans have been seeking to show Iran as a rogue state and a sponsor of terrorism, which is after nuclear bombs and wherein human rights have no place. Since 1979, the Islamic Republic of Iran has been faced with unending challenges and threats coming from outside. To the dismay of the country's enemies, all these subversive activities have only made Iran a stronger nation. A blow that does not break your back, only makes it stronger.
Hidden Files.
you heard about the billionaire space race? What about Harvey Weinstein's abuse case? Or the Trump supporters' takeover of the U.S. Capitol? Well, chances are that you have. When it comes to major stories from mainstream media, the world is certainly a small place where the news is heard loud and clear. But in the cacophony of these major stories, there are many voices that are hushed. Stories that seem as small as a single ordinary person and yet are as large as a community, a major city, or even a nation. Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today in this program, I'd like to take a pledge to provide you with a rare glimpse of news that seldom make the news, or stories that don't fit the mainstream plot, and of voices that are silent. But before we go further, let me tell you a personal story that doesn't only belong to me, one in which, had things gone differently, I would likely not be here with you today, and neither, perhaps, with the idea of this program, a story that started some 3 years ago with my arrest in the U.S.
It's just past 7:30 in the morning over here in the Iranian capital. You're going to have to begin this bulletin with a shocking development. Press TV's news anchor, Marzia Hashimi, has been detained and imprisoned in the United States with no formal charges. Ms. Hashimi was arrested in a St. Louis airport and has now been transferred to a Washington, D.C. facility by the FBI. The reason for her arrest, as I just said, remains unclear up to this moment. She was visiting the United States to visit her ill brother, who was terminally ill, I've been hearing, and of course visiting her other relatives. Ms. Hashimi has informed her family members of her ill treatment in detention. Hashimi, a Muslim woman, was born in the United States and is an American citizen.
Such stories of being kidnapped and arrested without charge are so surreal that it's hard to believe that it can happen to you. Until, of course, it does. Growing up as a Black American, studying journalism as a student and later as a convert to Islam, I heard and read this happened to many others, of course, but I never thought that I myself could end up being kidnapped and arrested. And that's exactly the point. The numbers speak for themselves.
Mass incarceration in the United States definitely has a racial component to it. According to the United States Sentencing Commission, Black male offenders receive sentences on average 19.1% longer than similarly situated white male offenders. In addition, Black men are 6 times more likely to be incarcerated than white men. Following is the lifetime likelihood of imprisonment for U.S. residents born in 2001.
With me understanding well the history of policing and the judicial system in the United States, when I was arrested, I knew that anything could happen to me. I knew that there were political prisoners in the country who were still incarcerated after 40 years and had spent most of those years in solitary confinement. Though the United States denies having any political prisoners, I knew how people had been framed for so many offenses. Now, my case was quite unique in another aspect. That is, unlike the many black men, Muslims, and activists, I had a decent following as a media personality here at Press TV. So the station kicked off an awesome information campaign about what was happening, and social media groups went into full gear getting the word out. I didn't know about all this from the inside of prison, of course, but I did see that my treatment was quickly improved, and then in a matter of days, I was released without charge. But I don't know of anyone else who has been this blessed. It's not uncommon for black men, for Muslims, and for activists to spend years in prison, at times in solitary confinement, without there being a shred of honest evidence against them. Many end up pleading guilty as they are not told that they will not be released unless they plea bargain and spend some years in prison. So it's only fair for me to use this platform to speak about those whose cases haven't received this kind of public attention, like fellow Americans whose country claims to be the vanguard of protecting human rights around the world, when in actuality it often falls quite short of defending human rights even according to its own constitution. Well, I'd like to bring in my special guest for this program. Welcome, Dr. Cynthia McKinney to Hidden Files.
Dr. Cynthia McKinney. As a member of the Democratic Party, Dr. McKinney served six terms in the U.S. House of Representatives starting from 1993. McKinney left the Democratic Party and ran in 2008 as the presidential candidate of the Green Party of the United States. She is a major critic of U.S. policy as it is related to Israel and was part of a Gaza relief boat to help to get basic supplies to the Palestinian people of Gaza. The boat was attacked by the Israeli Navy. McKinney introduced legislation to have the government release information about the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. She has also introduced legislation demanding the release of government information regarding the murder of Tupac Shakur.
Thanks so much for being with us. It's a pleasure having you. Well, I'd like to start off in looking at the situation. I mean, it was amazing what happened to me and the way it went down, Cynthia. And it appears what we're seeing is the erosion of the Constitution. Your thoughts about this and how exactly is this happening? What's going on?
Well, I think what has happened in the United States is that over the years, we've had a gradual shifting in even the kind of governance system that exists inside the United States. So there was a time when the Constitution was the primary law of the land, and people spoke about constitutionalism. The Bill of Rights was something that rolled off the tongues of everyone, and if a law or a particular behavior was unconstitutional, it was challenged. But gradually what happened is that we saw the erosion of not just, of constitutionalism and of the Bill of Rights itself. And so a situation like what happened to you, which is unconscionable in a country that prides itself on freedom and due process and justice. But now no one's rights are guaranteed. And so you've got people who went to the U.S. Capitol on January 6th, and they are in solitary confinement. Many of them have been in solitary confinement for months now. And the situation has changed. I believe what has happened is that there has been a coup against the U.S. Constitution. And the average, ordinary U.S. citizen doesn't realize that the constitutional protections that have been guaranteed for centuries really are no longer protecting the people of the United States. And the average ordinary U.S. citizen doesn't realize that the constitutional protections that have been guaranteed for centuries really are no longer protecting the people of the United States.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting what you said. I mean, your thoughts overall on the role of the mainstream media in misinforming people about that reality of constitutional law and the basic rights that Americans once had, but they no longer do.
We used to have media. Well, actually, there was a time when we had real media. And even though that media had its own sort of vested interest or special interest in and of itself, you could at least get half of the story from U.S. Media. It's Walter Cronkite, and that's the end of the story. Or you'd have the other fella on radio, and he'd say, and now the rest of the story. So there was always a way to dig a little bit deeper, and we had investigative journalists who were given the opportunity to hone their craft with the problems around governance. So you even had, say, for example, the Washington Post with Watergate. It was the Washington Post that broke the story. Right. Now the Washington Post covers up because it's been purchased indirectly by the CIA by way of Jeff Bezos and a $600 million contract for various things that Bezos was able to get by way of Amazon. So you've got a situation now where we don't even have alternative, we don't have responsible corporate media, we don't have alternative media because now the foundations have stepped in, and you've got George Soros who's pouring money into the Democratic Party, pouring money into alternative media. You've got already the other foundations, the Rockefeller Foundation and other foundations, pouring money into alternative media. So what used to be that, or what used to provide that critical analysis of what actually is happening in our political system and who is benefiting and who is losing, you don't have those questions even asked any longer. And so therefore, we've also had a situation where the courts in the United States have said that it's okay for the media to knowingly lie to its consuming audience. So now you've got legalized lying, you've got an end of investigative journalists, you've got the concentration of ownership of the media, both alternative and sort of corporate. And so now, basically, I think it was Mark Twain who said, even back then, he said that, you know, the more education you have, if you get your information from the regular media, then you're misinformed. Well, yeah, you're misinformed, and vast numbers of people in the United States are misinformed because they get their media from what they think are trusted sources, but they're no longer trusted.
What's your perspective on the internet being controlled and how that can affect people who are actually searching for the truth?
The shame of it all is that the internet itself and the research and development that gave us quote unquote social media was paid for by U.S. taxpayers. For these should be, as are the airwaves for that matter, should be public resources. But there's very little public in the public resources that have been privatized. Well, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said we need a revolution of values. And I would agree with that, talking about the United States. I would just say that we need a revolution, and that would probably end it full stop. I would end it full stop. We need to do away with everything that we know because it took a turn. And the turn that it took has been to the detriment of the people. It has been to the detriment of truth. It has been to the detriment of justice. It has been to the detriment of peace. We haven't had peace since I was an adult. And now I'm entering my senior years, and we still don't have peace. And in large measure, it's because of the belligerent policies of the United States of America. So we need to build new institutions, and they can exist alongside the current ones, but eventually we've got to get rid of the current institutions that no longer work for the people and no longer represent what they are supposed to be.
Well, when we look at the situation, I mean, Cynthia, both of us are American and neither one of us are living in the United States because of various reasons now. But when we look at the situation, the increase of censorship and pressure as far as the taking away of being able to have freedom of speech, I mean, what's happening? Where are we going with this?
Unfortunately, and there are so many more who are laboring inside the United States in jobs that they don't like, jobs that don't respect them, jobs just in order to make ends meet. And they, you know, for example, you have, I guess I shouldn't name, but I have followed many of the professors who are inside the United States, and they've been punished because of their belief system. And one of them is a Palestinian American who had a job offered to him, and then the job was snatched away from him when he put something on Twitter, and it's a shame. We have another professor who wrote a very internationally acclaimed book. That book was about the Holocaust, and he told me, Cynthia, I haven't worked since then. And that's probably been about 10 years ago, 10 or maybe 15 years ago now. So people are being punished. People are suffering in their own ways because the diminution of rights and the Bill of Rights is not a document that is living and breathing in the United States any longer.
Where do you see all this going? I mean, what has to happen in your perspective?
Well, you know, people outside sort of look at you askance when you say, well, you know, I'm much more comfortable outside of the U.S. than I am inside the U.S. And people don't like outside because the United States is something, it's a dream. It's something to be aspired to. To live inside the United States. Every child's goal in life in certain countries is to be able to get a job in the United States, to be culled by the great culling machine and then leave one's country in the brain drain and go and help make private organizations like Google and Facebook more wealthy than they already are. The world has been turned upside down. Our values have been turned upside down, and the system is rigged, and it's rigged internationally as well. That's not just a inside the United States kind of thing. It's been rigged for hundreds of years. How do we unrig ourselves? I actually thought about, I was at a anti-war protest, and I ended my speech by saying, "We shall take our country back." And then I thought about it for a while, and I said, I've been participating in anti-war speeches for 20 years, and we still haven't taken our country back, and we haven't ended the wars. After that last anti-war speech with the anti-war crowd that I was with, those are my people, and I thought about it, and I said, you know, I've been protesting for 20 years. I've been saying we're going to take for 20 years, and it hasn't happened yet. So what's the missing ingredient? When Trump said that the system is rigged, it was right. It was accurate. It was an accurate statement of that people in the U.S. find with their governance system now. What was left out of that analysis, though, was what has happened to the people since. I believe that for hundreds of years, as the system was being rigged, the people of the United States adjusted to the rigging of the system, and so they adjusted themselves. They themselves became rigged along with the rigged system. The only way we can actually have values that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked about is that we've got to unrig ourselves. We've got to dig deeply within ourselves and understand who we are, where we are, what our country has lost, and how we can get it back. Finally, the other thing is that not only in this sort of rigging and unrigging, the system has never, the United States has never dealt with some issues like the race issue. And race is easily used. It's the kindling that is always there, that all one has to do is throw a match that has been, but it still has a little spark. And that spark is enough to just combust the entirety of the United States. That is something that has to stop. And if it doesn't stop, we will never unrig ourselves, and we will never have the revolution of values that we need, and we will never take our country back.
Well, Dr. Cynthia McKinney, thank you so much for being with me. It has been a pleasure speaking to you here, Hidden Files. The way the alternative media led this fight for my freedom and the way that on social media, hashtag Free Marzia Hashimi went viral were very effective campaigns and say a lot about the potential for alternative voices to play a bigger role in highlighting what is really taking place on the ground globally. What my experience has shown me is that we can and must try to magnify the voice of the voiceless, and we can be effective. We have to dig into files that others don't want to touch, cases that have been ignored because it just wasn't in their interest to portray. And this program is a start. Here, together, we can inspect, inform, and ignite the change that needs to take place so that more stories can have a happy ending like mine, so that people like you and me can have a chance at living a life as a person and not be reduced to yet another statistic, another number. God willing, we will be back with another episode of Hidden Files next week with another story from another corner of this vast world of ours that has so much more going on than the titles from the mainstream media. Stay curious.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum to you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
حساب و کتاب خدا جدیه. بعضیا فکر می‌کنن شوخیه.
Examining the record of our deeds by Allah is a serious topic. There are some people who, on the Day of Judgment, won't think that the record of our deeds and investigating them was something real in the life. Even the most trivial points are kept in our record of deeds, and we must answer for them in the other world. This is something authentic and real, according to Islam. Also, examining the record of our deeds by Allah is a universal topic. Even the Holy Prophet of Islam must answer to Allah for his deeds in this world. He who has more will be examined more on the Day of Judgment. If you are wealthy, you will be asked more for your properties. If you have more knowledge, you will be asked more for your type of knowledge and how did you use it in this world. This case is even true about your beauty. All the blessings of Allah that are given to you in this world are trusts, and they will be asked about in the world hereafter. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.